This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week we'll hear from the mayor on the return of the cruise ships. We'll talk about a popular music festival coming up on PEI. Later in the show, we'll have interviews on Ribfest and the Heartland Tour. But first, Bill Bradley gets us started on a tribute to Alexander Graham Bell.
This year commemorates the 100th anniversary of Bell's death. Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone, the hydrofoil, and so many other things, and of course the silver dart. And what would have been the 145th anniversary of Alec and Mabel's anniversary, and the significance in that is, coming up on July the 11th, you can see the display of Alexander Graham Bell and his wife's letters to celebrate the 145th anniversary. But they're on display now, and the lady that knows all about the letters and the display, we welcome Caitlin from the Alexander Graham Bell Museum.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is, I think, very unique that people can actually see handwritten letters from each of them sent back and forth in the early days.
Yeah, it's really great. And like you said, you know, our museum focuses a lot on Bell's inventions, whether it be, you know, the silver dart or the HD4, the telephone. But we really wanted to focus on him and his wife, Mabel, as people, and just how, even though they were these great, fantastic, famous people, at the end of the day, they were still just people who worried about the same things we did and talked about the same things we did. So we really just wanted to showcase that in a new exhibit.
One in particular is from November 25th, 1875. And just a little snippet, it says, "I can scarcely believe now that you really and truly love me and that you will be my wife. I'm afraid to go to sleep, lest I should find it all a dream. So I shall lie awake and think of you." That's pretty cool to look back into the past and see those personal letters from Alexander Graham Bell. This is from Alex to Mabel, and there's also letters that she sent back to him as well, right?
Yes, yeah, and it's that back and forth, and that excerpt that you just read is a great example. You know, we see this famous inventor, and then you kind of see his poetic and romantic side talking to his wife. It's a nice little insight into him, and we also have the letters that she sent to Alec as well, and we kind of get to see Mabel's sense of humor in some of them. She talks about some strange dreams she's had where she's turned into a bat, and you know, she talks about just mundane things such as, you know, fixing a couch. So it's just really nice to kind of see people just be people.
One that I thought was very interesting, the one where she talks about Ben Bria and how they actually started the plans to actually get it up and running. That letter, that really piqued my interest.
Yeah, so a lot of people might not realize it took them so long to build Ben Bria. So when they came to Bedeck, they had lived in a series of, you know, they had a house, which was not big enough for them. They lifted it up on stilts and put another floor in, and then they ended up moving somewhere else. And then when they saw Ben Vrea, which they called Redhead, this huge swath of land, they knew immediately they wanted to build there. But as you can imagine, to build a home that large, it took a lot of planning. And one thing that Mabel was really interested in was gardens. She really loved gardening, and she had mentioned to Bell that, you know, it might not take that long to build a house, a couple years, but it can take 4 or 5 more years to establish a garden. So planning her house and planning her grounds was always really important to her.
Now take us back, if you can, before they actually moved to Bedeck. Is it true that Alec actually stayed at the Telegraph House, one of his first places before he decided that this is the place I want to be?
Well, I believe they traveled to Bedeck after seeing a book that was called Bedeck and That Sort of Thing by Charles Dudley Warner. And it kind of painted Bedeck as this lazy, sleepy kind of town where every day is like Sunday. So immediately Bell said, I want to go there. So he came, and they did stay at the Telegraph Hotel, and he fell in love with the town and the village immediately, and it reminded him of his home of Scotland, you know, the rolling hills and the water and the friendly people. So he did stay there, and it's kind of a little claim here.
So is that documented in the Telegraph House that he actually stayed there inside the Telegraph House?
That I'm not sure. If it is, I'm sure they would know.
The display is open now for anybody that wants to see it.
Yes, it is. And with regular admission to the museum, they can pop down and take a peek at those letters. And along with those letters, we also have some little artifacts inside the case. So one of those was Alec had made a little device for weighing letters because, again, if you send anything in the mail, you know that it's by weight. So he had a little device to weigh that. So we have that in there as well.
There's so many things that I'm sure that went through his mind, and I guess we'll never know all of them, but so many great inventions like the telephone. And I was there, and I saw a display of how he actually come up with kind of a wireless signal sent through a beam of light, and thought that that technology wasn't going anywhere right now. But behold, here we have the cell phone. I'm just wondering if that was the first ideas of actually of a cell phone. Did they go back that many years and got that idea?
Well, it's interesting because when we think of information being sent by light, you know, now we think of fiber optic cable, which essentially, that's kind of a precursor to that. So he was really, really ahead of his time with that. Just kind of amazing to look at that stuff, you know, from over 100 years ago and see how ahead of his time he was. Now we take fiber optic cable for granted and instant communication, right, for granted. So it's really eye-opening.
Again, it still amazes me that this gentleman actually lived here with his wife on Cape Breton Island. Bedeck invented the telephone, the hydrofoil, and so many great ideas as well. How many letters do you have on display there, Caitlin?
We have 3 from Mabel, and then we have about 5 from Alec to Mabel on display. And the hope is to kind of refresh these throughout the seasons to kind of, because we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters, right? So just kind of hopefully refreshing that and giving visitors a chance to kind of read those letters. And they're so important to us as interpreters because they help to inform the story we tell and everything we do with the site. So it's really nice to be able to share that with visitors.
I'd like to know, I'm sure our listeners would like to know, so where did these letters come from? Were they actually found in the house?
Well, that's kind of a good question. So we have a lot of copies of them, so not direct originals. The family still owns a lot of artifacts. We were able to open the museum in 1956 with a donation of a lot of artifacts from Bell's 2 daughters. So a lot of the letters, again, like we have copies, and so the originals, I'm not 100% sure, but we do know we have copies of letters that they have sent from, you know, before they were married all the way up until, you know, even Bell's passing with some letters that Mabel had sent. So it's really quite the task to go through them.
Letters, you're saying, that could be changed out throughout the season and maybe even the next season.
Yeah, and that's the hope, is to kind of give people, you know, so they're coming and maybe not seeing the same things they saw last season. Maybe we'll focus on, like Bell did a lot of work with sheep, and so we have so many letters where he's talking about his sheep experiments and how they became like his pets and how all that interesting stuff. So there's definitely a lot of material that we can switch out for years and years to come.
So folks want to go to the Alexander Graham Bell Museum in Bedeck. Tell us, what are the hours and when can people go?
So we're open every day from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. until October 30th. And this year is the 100th anniversary of Bell's death, the 99th year since Mabel died, since she died shortly after him. But we're celebrating a lot of things throughout the summer. So if people are interested, they can pop on to our Parks Canada website and see a list of the events happening all summer. But there's lots going on, so we encourage people to drop out and see the new letters exhibit and to maybe catch one of our other events.
Caitlin, really appreciate this, and I know our listeners are definitely going to want to go to the Bell Museum and see these letters.
Fantastic. We can't wait to see them.
We just heard from Bill and Caitlin covering a number of the Bell contributions, including the telephone, of course. And now we're going to hear from Kelly DeVoe of Parks Canada, who spoke to us previously on a little-known fact that roughly 145 years ago, someone was about to patent the telephone before him. But Bell gets the credit, partly in thanks to his wife Mabel and her father.
And interestingly, when we talk about Bell's most widely known invention, he had an impact in many other sectors. But when we talk about the telephone in our programs and at the museum site, a lot of visitors find it very interesting when we share some tidbits about the patent for the telephone. So the patent almost didn't happen. So that's a bit of an interesting tidbit, in fact. It was February 1876, and it wasn't Bell who actually filed a patent for the telephone. It was his business partner and future father-in-law, Gardner Hubbard. So he actually filed an application for the patent What was then described as the speaking telegraph. So it wasn't called the telephone then, it was the speaking telegraph. And he did so without Bell's knowledge. So as you can imagine, Mr. Bell wasn't too pleased, but then was rather grateful, because within just 2 hours of Mr. Hubbard filing that patent application, another inventor, Elisha Gray, filed a caveat serving notice to all other inventors that he too was working on a device for the transmission of speech by electricity. So that's quite remarkable when you think about it. Now, Bell's application was much stronger because he was already testing the workings of instruments, whereas the other inventor, Gray, was not. So because Bell's application, or the application his future father-in-law put in, was stronger, he actually did receive a patent on March 3rd, 1876, for the speaking telegraph. And then because he was already working on those instruments, it was only several days later, on March 10th, when that famous historic moment took place where Bell and his partner, Thomas Watson, were preparing to test the instruments they were working on, and then Mr. Bell accidentally spilled battery acid on his clothing, and he called out, "Mr. Watson, come here, I want you." But Watson actually heard it on the device they were testing in another room. So it's inspiring to, when you think about that, you know, that exciting moment. And Bell had dreamed of transmitting speech electronically several years ago, and now it became a reality, and he had worked so hard to get there. So Mr. Bell was inspired to invent and to create for the betterment of the world. And I know that sounds like a big statement, but there's this remarkable quote where Alexander Graham Bell said, "An inventor is a man who looks around the world and is not content with things the way they are. He wants to improve what he sees. He wants to benefit the world." And so I think that quote really speaks to Bell's motivation and drive for inventing. He was not driven by the commercial success of his creations. So I think that speaks more to the impact that his work was having. When you think about his work in aviation, his work in, you know, marine engineering, in medical science, you know, he really was driven by that desire to make the world a better place.
And he also did some groundbreaking work with someone whose name will be familiar to a lot of people, Helen Keller.
Well, Bell was actually first and foremost a pioneer in deaf education, and remained very committed and very passionate to his work in deaf education. And he did have a close relationship with Helen Keller, which continued for the rest of his life. And there's a wonderful passage in a book. It's called The Reluctant Genius, actually, by Charlotte Gray, where she talks about Bell and his relationship with Helen Keller and their first meeting. And Helen Keller, in some of her letters later in life, just attributes so much to Bell for seeing that potential. And it really was quite a special relationship that they held. And again, it was very much rooted in Bell's passion for deaf education.
And one of his contemporaries, Marconi, there's a National Historic Site here in Table Head in the Glace Bay area, and he's credited as being an inventor in radio, and he's behind the first wireless transmission from North America to Europe, and that was back in 1902. And so these gentlemen are responsible for technology that many of us simply can't do without today, and both of them have roots here in Cape Breton, and that's pretty remarkable when you think about it.
It is remarkable when you think about it, and exactly as you just said, there's so many facets of modern day technology that we simply cannot live without. You know, the power goes out, but we're still happy we have Wi-Fi on our phones, or accessing our phones through data. It is quite incredible, and there great stories, right? Great stories about invention, about innovation, about curiosity, about communication, about connecting people and people connecting with the world around them. And you're right, the roots are in Cape Breton. And that's exactly what we celebrate at both those sites. Parks Canada is there to share those stories, share that history, but also to inspire our visitors, anyone who walks through the door at Marconi or at the Alexander Graham Bell National Historic Site. We're looking to inspire visitors to think in that way, be inspired to invent, be curious about your surroundings, especially today. And I'll just share a little story about Bell's vision and how that's connected to today, not just in cell phones and Wi-Fi and those sorts of things, but it was 1921, less than a year before his death, and Bell was asked what specific development should we inventors be focused on in 1922. And his response was very, very straightforward. He said, energy. And he said, we're running out of energy. We're running short on energy. He said, the coal and oil are going to run out one of these days, and we'll be without it. So we've got to develop methods for substitutes for those fuels. And when you think about that, like that was 100 years ago, and here we are looking for alternate sources of energy. And Bell was talking about that 100 years ago, and he was thinking and creating around that. And one of his theories, actually, was that organic waste, such as corn stalks and wheat chaff, were potential energy as alcohol for fuel. So that's 100 years ago. So it just goes to show that when you have that curiosity and that thirst for inventing, solving problems, making the world a better place, it's incredible what you can envision and come up with. And we hope that our visitors get a little bit of that inspiration when they visit our site.
Mr. Watts? It talks! Mr. Bell! Mr. Bell, I heard you! I heard your voice!
Then hurry, I'm burned!
But I heard you! Your voice through the wire, I understood what you said.
What did I say? Tell me.
You said, Mr. Watson, come here, I want you.
That's right!
Well, what did you do?
I put two drops of sulfuric acid in the water. That made the water a conductor for the electric current transmitting the voice.
Oh, my leg. Stop howling. You gotta do something about that burn.
Oh, but I've gotta tell Mabel first.
Oh, no, you don't. You sit down and take your britches off. I get some lard.
But I've got to tell Mabel.
I might have known something like this had happened, leaving a lot of acids around you.
Ladies and gentlemen, now that the telephone is an accomplished fact, it gives me great pleasure to demonstrate its practical use in the social and business world. In a moment, my associate, Mr. Thomas Watson, will speak to you from the city of Boston, 20 miles away. For the benefit of the audience, additional receivers have been placed at strategic points throughout the hall. Ahoy, Mr. Watson.
This is Alexander Graham Bell speaking to you from Salem. Can you hear me?
Ahoy, Mr. Bell.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to address you this evening. Although I am in Boston and you're in Salem.
That's the first one.
Well,
Mr. Watson. The audience is now applauding you. Will you continue your demonstration?
You're next.
Hail Columbia, happy land. Hail ye heroes, heaven-born band, who came to town the other night to hear the round, see the fight and hear old Tucker's banjo that so gently o'er me stealing.
Memory will bring back the feeling.
Spite of all my griefs revealing, that I dearly love the Star-Spangled Banner. Oh, long may it wave
o'er the land of the free.
And the home of Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony, stuck a feather in his cap and called it Sweet Genevieve.
Entertained by a cornet solo.
Hoy, Mr. Bell. I have a special treat for you tonight.
There is a lady present and is going to speak to you. The first woman's voice ever to be heard publicly over the telephone.
Say something in here, quick.
All I've got to say is this.
If you and Mr. Bell don't stop this foolishness, pay your rent. Out you go.
It's wonderful.
Well, I only laughed because I thought...
Please, please. He's laughing at Alec.
Well, he better not be.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes our demonstration this evening. Anyone desiring further information will kindly step up here and leave his name.
What makes it talk, Father?
It's just a plain hollow wire. You talk into it at one end, and naturally the voice comes out at the other.
Very amusing evening, Mr. Bell. Imagine putting one of those things in your home and expecting your wife to use it.
Edward, you really think there's nothing to it?
Gardner, in my opinion, the telephone will never be anything more than a toy.
You won't put any of your money into it or advise your friends to do so?
I shall urge all my friends. They have nothing to do with it.
Thanks. I just wanted Mr. Bell to have your opinion. Good night.
Good night, Gardner. Good night, Mr. Bell. Good night, Mrs. Hubbard.
Good night, Miss Hubbard.
Thanks to Bill, Caitlin, and Kelly for their time on this tribute to Alexander Graham Bell. We just heard a clip from the 1939 film The Story of Alexander Graham Bell, starring Don Ameche, Loretta Young, and Henry Fonda. And now we're going to set sail over to the newsroom, where Bobby Knott caught up with Mayor Amanda McDougall to talk about some welcome sights in Sydney Harbour after a long voyage through COVID-19.
First of all, how is the cruise ship season going so far? I guess back ships are back this year after a couple of years because of the pandemic.
Yeah, and so I think the general consensus is people are happy, so happy to see cruise ships back in our harbor. I know walking downtown, for example, on cruise ship days, it's so nice to see our restaurants full, our shops bustling. But I'm also hearing from the Fortress of Louisburg, for example, we're hearing from the Miners Museum and our tourism-related infrastructure here, that it just feels so great to be back in action.
So all those organizations are benefiting, and I suppose the businesses are as well.
Yeah, and so I don't think we'll be able to see tangible numbers of what the return to cruise impact is going to be financially until the end of cruise ship season, but just the vibe just the feeling, just the excitement, it's so wonderful.
And by my count, and if I've got it right, I think there was only one ship so far that had to cancel, and that was because of weather out of New York City. It wasn't because of weather here. And I think as of the Zandam visited this week, and I'm counting 74 more visits for this season for Sydney.
It's incredible. Yeah. I remember seeing these numbers when we had Marlene Usher from the Port of Sydney coming into council, just to tell us and get us updated as to what to expect this year. And after 2 years of nothing, it's remarkable we've been able to rebound so quickly and businesses be able to open their doors and just kind of jump back in as if nothing has changed. And I'll tell you something. I have a really sweet story. I came into the office one day and my office manager said, "Hey, there's a handwritten letter here." And typically, you know, that might raise a couple of alarm bells, like, oh, somebody's angry and might leave a little note anonymously. This was a note from a cruise ship passenger who said, "Your city is beautiful. We're so happy to be able to visit again. Thank you for being so welcoming. CBRM, we'll be back again."
Oh, well, that's very nice.
It's just it is, and this is it. You know, we are such good hosts. It's no wonder that our tourism industry is one of our leading industries in economic growth and development for the island. And seeing that little note it just brought me so much pride for our community.
It's funny because I of course, our studios are in downtown Sydney now, so on cruise ship days on my way home, I remember one day stopping and to let some people cross the street, and they were kind of looking at me. You know,
right?
Are you really stopping
that's
for
exactly
us?
Right. You know, so. Yeah, and I think that's the term, right? Not only did you stop, you probably gave them a wave. And
yes.
I think those are the things that bring people back. They remember those feelings. They remember feeling welcomed and walking down the street saying hi to people. It's almost like you take them off guard a little bit, but what a great way to take people off guard is with kindness.
Yes, exactly. Now, there were some lessons learned from the pandemic. I mean, the Port of Sydney, I guess it put, you know, pretty much all its eggs in the cruise ship basket. So there have been some changes made down on the waterfront with the businesses there, right?
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it's funny, last evening leaving council, I was heading towards Spar and heading by the cruise pavilion there and saw the big new sign saying Shop the Fiddle and all of the different images there representing the different businesses that are down on our waterfront. And the thing about that, yeah, it's great for our tourists when they do come here, but there's so much opportunity for folks from here, our domestics, as we call them, our neighbors, our friends, for us to go down, shop, see the amazing talent from our local artisans and entrepreneurs, and have some fun. And so that is really, really important. I think many businesses and many sectors have learned the need for diversification and to end the reliance on one revenue stream.
And there's quite a range of businesses. Did I read there's a hairstylist?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know about that, but that's amazing.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
You can be decked out from head to toe and your belly full and also have some recreational opportunities. I know there's even those scooters and what have you to go touring around on. It's amazing. It's really varied what you can do down there. So very exemplary of the creativity of the island, that's for sure.
And there are plans in the works for even further development. I guess is it the Pittman Hall in future?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that was another option being explored by the Port of Sydney, is turning that into a really waterfront district markety feel. You would see that in different port cities as well. But I mean, even from the CBRM point of view, we had an RFP put out there a number of months ago that we're going to be coming back to discuss the proposals on for our waterfront land down there. So the development happening downtown is wonderful. It's amazing for our tourism industry, but we're going to see tremendous growth and opportunity for our own community first and foremost.
Are you able to give a hint as to how much interest there has been in that land?
You know what? I wouldn't. We haven't entered into those conversations yet, so I've been very I've been very particular about staying out of the procurement process. I want to receive this as my council members do, so we can all look at it with fresh eyes. And so once that is public, we'll be sharing that for sure.
But I think I heard somewhere there has been interest. Or you've gotten,
oh, absolutely.
You've gotten proposals.
Yeah.
So. Okay,
yeah, that's exciting.
That is good news. I mean, I guess to dare go into the, you know, the, I don't know if you, if I even should dare say it, but I mean, you know, COVID, you know, wreaked havoc with the cruise season for 2 years, but of course it hasn't gone away. You know, things have opened. I mean, you know, what fears do you have about, you know, COVID, I guess, rearing its ugly head again and us having to quickly make adjustments?
Well, honestly, I think we're well-versed in this now. As a community, as a province, as a country, we've learned a lot. We've been through many waves. And even as a municipal government, we know what to do if such a thing were to happen again. You know, I've been traveling myself. I've been in British Columbia, in Regina, in Newfoundland. You know, we know how to be careful. We know how to take care of ourselves, but more importantly, each other. I don't have fears anymore, and I think that's just because we're so educated on how to handle this. And we, if something bad happens, we're prepared. But right now, I have to be honest, it feels really, really good to see people, to see smiling faces, to say hi, and to be able to welcome people back to CBRM.
Yeah, it is a relief after 2 years, indeed. It does feel like a, you know, with summer coming, like someone's opening the windows and letting the summer breezes in, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Because,
so, well, I thank you for your time today, Mayor, and maybe we'll check back with you once the season is over and have a look back on how things went.
Absolutely. And I mean, I just want to put a quick plug in there too. So throughout the summer, in addition to the waterfront, our recreation department's going to be putting out their summer rec guide as well. So there's going to be events in every corner of the municipality all summer long. It can be music, it can be creativity and art. There's also lots of sports events too. So I just can't wait to see everybody. I can't wait to get out there. I can't wait to have some fun this summer and come back together.
Yes, we're getting back to, I guess, sort of normal, the new normal.
The new normal. We're living the new normal. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next up, the Country Cafe's Bill McNeil chats with Serge Bernard, who's a board member and spokesperson for the 35th annual PEI Bluegrass and Old Time Music Festival, taking place in PEI starting July 1st.
First of all, welcome to the coast, Serge.
Thanks, Bill. Really proud to be on the coast.
Well, it's nice to be chatting with you, and I know you folks love your local music over in PEI as much as we do here on this island, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about the history of the annual Bluegrass and Old Time Music Festival. As I see, it's into its 35th year.
Yes, that's right, Bill. My goodness, the festival started, it had humble beginnings. We started at a campground, it was called the Denali Campground out in Cornwall here, just a small community out of Charlottetown. And then from there, we grew the festival every year and that sort of thing. And then eventually, we outgrew the spot, and as well, the campground, the owner retired, and I think he was selling his campground. So we had to find a new venue. So we started looking around quite a bit, and then the Field of Dreams, the Rollo Bay Fiddle Festival, they had their event every year, and ours didn't have any conflict with theirs. Ours was always the first full weekend of July in that, in the Bluegrass Circuit in the Maritimes. So anyway, we opened up conversations with the Chasson family, Peter Chasson in particular, and he welcomed us with open arms. And we went over there in 96, I believe, and we were there up until about 3 years ago. We've seen the highs and lows over the years and that sort of thing, and perhaps our biggest year at the Rollo Bay Festival grounds, we had a little over 700 RVs It was huge, Bill. And so in any event, we continued with them for many years, a great relationship. And then the opportunity came to go to the Dundas Fairgrounds. And that's where we are. And, of course, we just had our first year at the Dundas Fairgrounds until COVID struck. So anyway, now this is going to be our second year celebrating our 35th season at the Dundas Fairgrounds.
And maybe, Serge, for those folks who are thinking about heading over to PEI, maybe you can explain where Dundas is.
Dundas is about, I'd say, 20 minutes north of Montague. It's at the east end of the province, and it's about halfway between Montague and Surrey. So I don't know if you have any listeners from the Magdalene Islands that come into Surrey. So for people that would happen to come in from the Surrey area, so you'd travel towards Montague about 20 minutes. Or people coming in from Charlottetown, it's about 40 minutes to Dundas. And if you take the ferry from Wood Islands, it'd be about 35 minutes through Montague. So it's on the east end of the province, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful area there, certainly Montague as well, and coming off mm-hmm. the ferry, it's a very short drive, really. I mean, it's not that long, and then you're there.
No, exactly, and the traffic, especially on the ferry, it's kind of neat because, you know, no matter which ferry you happen to catch, there's some people that are you happen to know or you catch up with and that sort of thing. Oh, where are you heading? And most times you connect with people that are heading to the festival grounds, and so it's always great that people come in together. Even when we're at the ticket booth, oftentimes you still sense the ferry traffic, what we call the ferry traffic, because they all come in a rush at the same time. And they'll say, oh, yeah, well, buddy behind me, he was in the ferry as well, and all that good stuff. So it's one big family. It's good.
And, of course, you've got plenty of entertainment lined up for the 3 days. I think over 12 bands, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. A real nice lineup this year. The Poor Ramblin' Boys are headlining the Bluegrass Festival. They're from basically the old Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee. That'd be Dollywood, that area, and that sort of thing. That's pretty well where they got their start as a band. C.J. Lewandowski, he is a wonderful mandolin player and a great bluegrass historian. And he crafted his band basically around the early history of bluegrass, the Ralph Stanley sound, the Carter Stanley sounds, from deep in the hills of, you know, Western Virginia, East Tennessee, that whole area with the old music, the old mountain style bluegrass music is, with an archtop banjo and that sort of thing. So he's got a five piece band, and they're going to be headlining our stage, as well as Dave Atkins, who is a fine southern gentleman and a great vocalist. And Zinkin Company as well, they're a great band who also make their home at Dollywood as well in East Tennessee. So they're going to be joining us. And a great lineup of maritime bands, including the world-famous Spinney Brothers from the Valley, Matlin and Echo Mountain, great bands from Nova Scotia. New Brunswick Hall of Famer, Country Music Hall of Famer Eddie Poirier and Grassline, they're going to be with us, as well as Monroe. And our very own daughter of bluegrass, my darling wife, Jana McGarry, is going to be there, as well as SK Bluegrass, the Stiff family, a beautiful family band that just moved to PEI here about 3 years ago. They're going to be here joining us at the festival, as well as Blue Zone, Just Grass, Heartfelt Grass, and Bluegrass Revival. A great lineup indeed.
Certainly a great lineup, nice varied lineup as well. And also, in addition to the performances, are there going to be some workshops for maybe aspiring musicians or musicians that are looking to improve their craft a little bit?
Oh, yes, and share some you know, some stories and that sort of thing. Ricky Skaggs famously said bluegrass music is perhaps the most approachable music. There's no distance at all between the performers and the fans. And I think we're all fans at heart of the music. So definitely there's workshops. Typically they happen on Saturday mornings. There's open mics on Wednesdays and Thursday evenings. and the workshops happen on Saturday. The main stage goes from 10 in the morning till 10 in the evening. And it's just wall-to-wall banjos, all kinds of fun.
And maybe a few fiddles thrown in there for good measure somewhere along the way?
Well, yeah. Oh, of course. Laura Orshaw is the fiddle player with the Poor Ramblin' Boys, and she's got a brand new album coming out as well. So she's going to be up, and I'm sure she's going to have some product with her as well. So she's got a great album that's climbing the charts right now, too, and a wonderful fiddle player.
And what about for folks that are looking to purchase tickets? What's the best way to purchase those at this point?
Well, yeah, to get them ahead of time, all you need to do is Google peibluegrass.ca, and that'll get you to our website, and they're facilitated through Eventbrite. So they'll take your visa information and all that good stuff. You can purchase them there. So your best way to get tickets is basically through the website, and all the information's on the website, peibluegrass.ca.
Okay. And, of course, the festival is taking place Canada Day through the 3rd at Dundas PEI. So we wish you folks the very best with the festival. Hopefully the weather is going to cooperate. And I know PEI usually has pretty good weather in July. I've been there many times, so I think it'll be okay.
Oh, yes. No, we typically start, marking the field so that all the RVers can park in a row and that sort of thing. We mark out all their lots and that sort of thing. Usually do that on Sunday before the festival. And then people start rolling in during the week. And the weather's usually great. Around Canada Day, the weather settles and then we have a wonderful festival.
Well, we wish you all the best with the 35th Annual Bluegrass and Old Time Music Festival for PEI. And certainly want to thank you for taking the time to chat with us today, Serge.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you so much for including us on your show.
The Heartland Tour is back this year in person coming up in July, and it's also available online if you want to do the virtual tour. Lady that knows all about Heartland Tour and has been participating over the last number of years, we'll welcome Elaine Schwartz to the program.
How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. Great. Love to be outdoors.
Tell us a bit of the history of the Heartland Tour if folks don't know about it.
16 years ago, cardiologist and an oncology surgeon decided to get together, both brothers from Whitney Pier in Sydney, decided to get together and promote physical activity and prevention of chronic conditions, particularly cardiovascular disease and cancer. But what we realized is that all levels of activity, all different types of physical activity contribute to the prevention of chronic conditions in Nova Scotia. So for 16 years now, we've developed a public awareness and an engagement campaign that covers through the province. We promote benefits of active lifestyle. We visit 8 major communities over a week period from July 9th to the 17th. We meet with the community leaders in each community, and they develop events that encourage Nova Scotians to choose a more physically active lifestyle. So in Sydney on July 11th, on Monday, we're meeting in Open Hearth Park, and we have 3 different levels of walks, 1 kilometer, 3 kilometer, 5 kilometer. We have a 5K run, and the Cape Breton Runners are involved in that. We also have a short route for adult cyclers and a long route for adult cyclers. And we also have engagement physical activity for youth and children. And that is all happening in Open Hearth Park on July 11th.
We get to what? About how many people that usually get involved? How many people are actually participating far that you have signed up?
So interesting. Not quite sure. I couldn't break it down yet as far as how many are registered for the virtual, but definitely we have 99 registered from the County of Cape Breton or this region. And that's Glace Bay, North Sydney, Sydney Mines. All the communities are together on this. Interesting is that the county in the province with the highest percentage of registrants and participants receives a $2,500 prize from wild blueberry growers of Nova Scotia. And with that money, it could be used for repair or maintenance of a local trail. And I'm really pushing that because we have beautiful, tremendous trails here that could really use the funds, and it's all free.
Who doesn't love blueberries?
Who doesn't like blueberries? That's our health food. Antioxidants, lowers cholesterol, it prevents cancer. What other province in the world has the most blueberries? This is it, right?
Well, isn't Nova Scotia the capital for blueberries? Oxford, Nova Scotia?
That's right. Yeah, and the other big sponsor besides Doctors Nova Scotia, Nova Scotia Dairy Group.
Okay.
So there will be some free milk on hand and free snacks and some music, a little socialization, just to get people moving and to for them to engage down in Open Hearth Park. And it's for all ages. I'd really appreciate if families would just book a day of their vacation and come as a family and really enjoy the outdoors and the benefits of physical activity.
So the question that I have, as I'm sure people listening to this, is this free? Do I have to sign up? Do I have to raise any money? How does it work?
Registration is free, always has been free. And for the first 1,500 registrants, there were free T-shirts.
Nice.
And yeah, but we surpassed that on May 17th.
Wow.
You won't get the free T-shirt, but you know, if you registered previous years, wear that T-shirt because it's the exact same T-shirt. So we had 1,500 this year, and they're all gone. They're all booked for registrants. But I was just thinking, if you didn't get your T-shirt and you registered, those that didn't show up for their T-shirts on that day, I will have some free T-shirts to give away. Speaking of free prizes, we now have 3 youth bikes purchased that we're giving away that day. And we also have gift certificates for sneakers. So I'm kind of hoping that some youth and some families can come down. And, you know, those prizes are free. It's a ticket draw when you register in the morning.
I'm sure there's a Facebook page and a web page somewhere where they can actually get all that information, right?
That's right. You can go into various different sites. All you have to do is punch in or click in Heartland Tour, all one word, .ca. And then when it opens up, it's Heartland Tour 2022. And on the top panel, it says registration. Just click that and then click Sydney. And when you click Sydney, all the events for the morning are on that. Or you could click registration and go virtual. And the virtual is from the 9th to the 30th of July. And you could print off a log sheet if you wish. And there's prizes available for that as well. It starts July 9th in Halifax, and we're in Truro on the 10th, and then Sydney on the 11th in the morning.
Okay, so looking forward to it. It sounds like a fun time, and let's see if we get those numbers up. And I don't think you're going to have a problem this year because of the fact that it was virtual the last couple of years. People are wanting to get out and have some fun activities, and this is a great way to do it with your family.
I must mention, Open Hearth Park is an amazing spot. It's got something for everybody there of all levels and all abilities. Hope to see you there.
That was Bill Bradley with his guest, Elaine Schwartz. Bill's going to wrap up the show for us this week, and you might want to save your appetite.
It's back! It's Ribfest 2022. Couldn't have it the last couple of years because of the pandemic, but it's back this July. And with us, with public relations for Rotary Ribfest, is Michelle McKinnon. Glad to have you on the show.
Oh, glad to be here.
This is exciting news for me and for other folks here in the CBRM who love ribs. And those ribs that they serve up during Ribfest, I don't even know if there's a word, but how about awesomely delicious ribs? Does that cover it?
They're two really good words.
Okay.
And we are so excited to be back, as you said, after 2 long years. And yeah, mouth-watering, delicious, all of the above. We hope it's going to be one of the biggest and best events of the summer.
And looking at some of the entertainment that you got there, man, oh man, that's going to be incredible as well. So not only would you get to enjoy some incredible ribs, but also the best that Cape Breton has to offer. What do we have for lineup for talent and what days, if I can just kind of pick your brain there for a few minutes?
Well, we have such an incredible lineup of talent throughout the weekend, and it's truly, you know, some of Cape Breton's finest musicians. Someone you know quite well, Phil Thompson, he's our volunteer that looks after booking all of these entertainers, and he's just done an incredible job. So you're going to hear everything from country to blues to, well, on Sunday, for example, we've got Pretty Archie and Heather Rankin. So it's going to be epic.
It's just one of those things that we've missed over the last couple of years during the pandemic, and glad to see that it's coming back. And I know people in the past, and it's only been going for a few years now with Ribfest along with Rotary, but people plan their vacation around this because they don't want to miss it.
Well, and we're so grateful that that is the case. You know, in some of our busiest weekends, we've had over 33,000 people come through the gate. And not only does the participation of so many help the Rotary Clubs of CBRM, but also to the charities that we feature. And this year, for the third year, it's Caleb's Courage and the Tom McNeil Cancer Patient Care Fund. So two incredibly worthy charities. You know, as you come through the gate, if you're able to give, that's where your donations are going to go. Come and enjoy what is truly a family fun weekend. We've got things for the kids. We've got things for adults. And we've already mentioned the music. And, of course, the food. So it's a great three-day event.
It's kind of like a fair atmosphere. If you've never been there before, you walk in and you're like, wow, this kind of reminds me of the old days, kind of like a circus kind of fair atmosphere. There's all kinds of things happening, music and entertainment and great food. And, of course, great people here. People plan their vacation around it because it's such a great event.
It really is. And you're absolutely right, Bill. It's very much like a family fun fair. And it has that wonderful festival-like atmosphere. And we also work really hard, and we're very proud as Rotary Clubs, that it's a very green event. We are very careful about recycling and composting. So we really work hard at, you know, keeping this a green event as well as one that every member of the family can enjoy.
Speaking of that, we're looking for volunteers. If folks want to volunteer for RipFest, how can they do that?
They can go on the website, and you'll see, hopefully on a Facebook page near you, that call for volunteers. So, you know, as you can imagine, an event like this does take a lot of volunteers to pull it off. So we would welcome anyone who wants to help us out.
And we want to give a big shout out to the sponsors as well. They definitely deserve a lot of credit because they couldn't do it without the sponsors pulling off an event like this.
Absolutely. And, you know, from the very beginning, Member 2 has been with us as our prime ribber, and they are with us again this year, and we are so grateful, as we are to all of our sponsors.
Now we just got to hope for great weather. It, rain or shine, is going to happen, and the ribs are going to taste delicious. I can smell them and taste them right now.
And it will be the sauciest event of the summer.
So that's coming up in July, but what are the dates?
July 15th, 16th, and 17th at Open Hearth Park.
All right, put a side of ribs away from me, Michelle, because I cannot wait.
Absolutely.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.